The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
We're getting you ready for the game on The Buildup with news from around the league, interviews, highlights, and more. Here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right. We don't get much time to enjoy that win because the San Jose Sharks are back at it again today, taking on the New Jersey Devils, 3:30 pregame, 4 o'clock go time. The Sharks played well enough to win last night. It wasn't perfect. They had some unbelievable transcendent performances from Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. We're even overlooking a 3-point night from William Eklund, a 2-point night from Dmitry Orlov, a point each for Colin Graf, as well as Michael Misa. So yeah, the San Jose Sharks got it done offensively. They obviously didn't have the greatest game ever defensively, but maybe today that is a step in the right direction. But I do have a great interview coming up for you. I spoke with Johnny Lazarus of NESN, Daily Faceoff, USHL, BR Open Ice, former college teammate of Mario Ferraro, and he had some great insights as to what he saw last night at the Garden with the Sharks and beyond, so enjoy this interview. Johnny, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm good, Ted. Could have been better had the Rangers pulled it out last night, but you know what? I'm a fan of these young Sharks and happy to see those guys get a win and be rewarded for a great game.
No, it was a wild game, man. A lot of back and forth, and obviously the offense started coming to life for the Rangers at home, which I'm sure was a very, very much needed sign, even if it did culminate in a loss. But I'm just curious, when you're watching a team like the Sharks, because you're on the other side of the country, mm-hmm. I know that out here we're way too much in the thick of it. What is your perspective on San Jose when you've watched them up until last night get off to another really rough start, 0-4-2? How are you viewing it?
I think, you know, as most people would, it's still immaturity, I guess would be the word that comes to mind, right? Like, I think a big part of what San Jose struggles with is game management and knowing how to close out games. I mean, again, that's easy to say, you know, after seeing them blow a couple leads. Like, even last night, you know, the Rangers go down 2-0 early, and it's like, okay, but they are playing the Sharks, and the Sharks team, we've seen this happen before. So, you know, while you can think negatively quickly if you're on the Rangers side, you do know your opponent has been known to not be able to close these kinds of games out. So while the Sharks have a ton of young skill and so many exciting players and personalities with that as well, mm-hmm. There is still this learning curve, and it's only human nature when you are, you know, full of a group that has a lot of younger players in it and a lot of inexperienced players in it to not know how to manage those situations. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know how to do it, but, you know, I've seen those older, more mature players, and the Rangers were guilty of it last night. The Rangers made a lot of mental mistakes last night. You know, I think three of the goals that San Jose scored last night were all just the Rangers not respecting their opponent and sleeping a little bit too. So, excuse me, it could happen both ways, but you know, I think last night you see the young skill and talent that this Sharks team has. And while Macklin and Will are certainly the highlights of last night's win, mm-hmm. I thought Misa had a pretty strong game. He makes the whole play happen pretty much on that first goal, you know, winning a 50-50 battle and creating some separation. And obviously he's still getting acclimated to the league as well. So as you guys say, the future is teal. But, you know, I think the big question is the future happening now with Macklin and how good he already is?
When you do watch Macklin have a 5-point game and the youngest ever to have a hat trick at MSG, did you have that moment last night of like, oh, I'm watching one of the early special performances of what could be a very long and impactful career in the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I do color commentary for Hockey East, so I got to call a UMass BU game when Macklin was at BU, and the Minutemen were actually up going into the third. I'm pretty sure Macklin scored 2 goals in the third period, and BU came back and won that game. And from there, I was already like, yeah, I see why this kid is going number one overall. Because there's obviously a lot of talented players that get drafted first and, you know, get drafted high, but not all of those talented kids can really just take over a game by themselves. And while Macklin didn't do that last night because Will was a big part of it, you see that the pressure doesn't get to him at all. Like, mm-hmm. There has been moments where Macklin could be frustrated. He hasn't really let that show. And again, like, I was talking to, you know, a former Ranger actually last night. We were just texting. I'm not going to say his name because I don't know if he wants me to say his name or not. But, you know, he already said, like, Macklin would be the best team in red, white, and blue. Or best player in red, white, and blue last night. You know, there's 20 teams I could probably think of in the NHL where he's already the best player on that team. And I think for him, you know, Ryan Reeves said it post-game last night, like, he's already a superstar. And I think he's definitely pushing for Team Canada, right, in Milan, like, just to bring him along. If you know that 4 years from now he's a lock, like, why not let him get that experience and be around, you know, some of the game's best. But, you know, someone who's covered Hockey East and watched Macklin a little bit before the NHL, it's certainly not a surprise to see how good he is this early.
Do you find it a little silly that everybody is already engaging in the Bedard versus Celebrini argument? Because I'm not trying to be soft or anything, but my reaction is like, guys, we're barely into the infancy of their careers. We don't know anything about the long term. And it's really hard to judge talent as well when they're both on very rebuilding teams. These are not the finished products. It's like, you don't go judge Connor McDavid by what he was in his rookie season, or even when he was named a captain at age 19 in year two. You saw a lot of talent, but I mean, people engaging in some sort of argument back then, I just feel it would have been equally as, I don't know, pointless.
I don't think it's anything new, because I mean, I was a kid and I remember on ESPN hearing the Crosby Ovechkin, and obviously 10 years ago, social media wasn't what it is now, but there was the McDavid Eichel, you know, and I think now, you know, 10 years later, it's Celebrini Bedard. And I think it just seems more magnified now because you can see it every day if you turn your phone on. So I think, I don't think anything's changed in that regard. Like, I think those conversations have always been there, but you're just seeing more of it now because, again, like, there's so many different outlets and platforms and people who cover the game that want to have that conversation. And, you know, we're guilty of it. We've talked about it on our show a lot because, you know, Colby and I are, he's a BU guy. So he's obviously a huge Macklin Celebrini guy. And, you know, I remember last year saying Bedard's 19 years old. Like, we can have that conversation now, but that doesn't mean that's what the conversation will be when they're 26, you know? And I think that's just how, you know, sports journalism and media goes. Like, you're having the relevant conversation, the hypothetical what if, and it's fun and it's entertaining, and then it changes, right? So this Celebrini Bedard conversation will probably be had until one of them ends up winning a Stanley Cup, and then forever, or until the next person wins, it's that guy who's in the edge. Because we've seen it with, I guess McDavid's the only exception because Eichel got the cup first, but McDavid's also just on a planet of his own, so it doesn't really count. But yeah, I think this is typical stuff. We just see it more now.
I'll give you my riff of having seen McDavid in person, you know, for the last decade roughly. I feel like he's wearing an invisible propulsion system. Like, he's got a jet back that we just can't see because all of a sudden he just takes a step and he's just gone on the ice. I'm like, I don't understand that. It reminds me of a quote from Hubie Brown talking about LeBron James, where he says he's the only guy when he runs by you can hear the audible whoosh when he goes by. It's like, it's that same thing. It's just, the guy is just, like you said, on another planet. Makes for a lot of fun. I know you've probably been paying attention to what Schaefer has been doing simply by proximity. I mean, A, your thoughts on him, because he was very, very impressive a couple nights ago against San Jose. And then after that, your thoughts on the number two pick. You riffed on it briefly there. Michael Misa finally starting to rack up his first couple of points, albeit quietly, here in the league.
Yeah, I think for me, I'll start with Schaefer. And again, like, I couldn't have been more wrong. I said there's no way an 18-year-old defenseman's coming in and having an immediate impact. And I said he should have went to college or even back to the OHL just to get some games under his belt. And I didn't think that was crazy at the time. But again, like, full transparency, I hadn't watched much of him last year.
We didn't play. A lot.
Yeah, he didn't play. So I understand there was a lot of hype, but like, What 18-year-old in any world from any league would come in and have the impact that he's having? Like, it's so clear that this kid is different. And, you know, I was just talking about it on the hockey show, saying, like, he's also becoming just unhateable. And I'm not taking away from Macklin or Connor Bedard, but the personality and the vibrance that Schaefer has brought with him already, I mean, he is making the entire hockey world fall in love with him. And even when he does, at some point, if he does, which I don't know if I even see it coming, hitting a wall, it's going to be hard to really get on him, because I think the consistency and the personality and the maturity of this kid is just unlike anything I've seen. Again, not only on the ice, but off the ice as well. And with Misa, you know, granted, you know, other side of the country, so I'm not nearly seeing the media coverage. But yesterday he was in the locker room and we surrounded him for what felt like 10, 15 minutes and he was answering questions. Like I actually said to him, I was like, you're a pro dude. Like that was unbelievable. Like you didn't crumble at all. And you had, you know, a full scrum around you for 10, 15. And again, with Misa, it's a little bit different just because, you know, I think he's slotted as like the third line center. Right. So a little bit less responsibility than Schaefer's been given, but Schaefer's also earned it. I don't want to say Misa hasn't like earned, you know, getting top line minutes yet, but Schaefer really just like took control. But again, there's no one, as far as the Islanders blue line goes, there's no one really blocking Schaefer, you know, like the blue line there is not all that strong as far, especially as far as offensive talent goes. So probably easier for him where, you know, Misa obviously has Macklin ahead of him and, you know, maybe he can get that second line center spot at some point from Wenberg. And you'd like to see Misa maybe on that 5-on-3 power play last night. But, you know, he seems like a kid with a good head on his shoulders. He talked to me yesterday about, you know, learning everything about defensive zone schemes and how that's like a big thing he has to learn this year is just knowing how to play defensive hockey. And I think with him, it'll click for sure at some point. He's too talented for it not to click.
With your background, I just want to ask you this because one of the talking points that gets bandied about is play away from the puck. And specifically that means keeping your feet moving on defense, how guys situate themselves. That's a talking point for Will Smith since day number one. And I think that, you know, last year around January, he started to figure it out more. And for Michael Misa, he's still figuring it out, as you just alluded to. What does that mean to you when you hear that referenced about a young player?
To learn how to defend away from the puck?
Or just the play away from the puck overall.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's funny. I don't feel like I really learned the game of hockey till I got to college. You know, I think you obviously learn things from coaches growing up, but like little X's and O's, different schemes, different tactics, different terminology, even, you know, when you get to college, it's a whole different ball game. And I think the preparation that you have going into every game, cause you have Monday through Friday to really learn your opponent, even study your own game. You're watching video, you're, you know, one-on-one with the coaches, you're doing skills work. Like that's when, you know, for me, I really learned it. So for these young guys who are, you know, Will and Macklin are 2 years out of school, like they're still learning a lot about the game. You know, it's funny. I was actually joking with the UMass coaching staff a couple weekends ago saying, I feel like I'm a much better hockey player now than I was in college. And granted, like I'm playing beer league and whatnot, but I feel like I know the game better. The older you get, the more you learn. It's only human nature. So, you know, I think for these guys, it is, I mean, Will Smith is what, 19, 20?
He's 20 now, but yeah, might as well be.
Yeah. You know, so like they're so young. I don't even feel like I knew the game of hockey at 20 years old. So I think at 23 years old, you know, he'll be a guy that you have no concerns about. And again, that's still 3 years from now, right? Like they're so young and already seeing what we saw last night. Like when have you seen two kids who can't even buy a beer dominated MSG like that? Like like that performance last night was unbelievable from the two of them. And, you know, I hope I answered your question. I kind of rambled there, but
no, it's great. Yeah. And I think the other thing you brought up is that those two were so good and dominant is people aren't even talking about the 3 points from William Eklund, who's also part of that young core in San Jose. And that's a good problem to have to where you have such overwhelming performances that the 3 point guy isn't getting the same run as the guy who had 5 points or the guy who had 4 points, which is just, it's not the norm. You know, you got to go to the Sharks dressing room. You saw Ryan Reeves, you saw Mario Ferraro, two big personalities.
Yeah.
And so much of the talk has been about the Sharks losing. And we kind of riffed on it just before we started that loss in game number one to Vegas. I mean, that was brutal. That's just the hockey gods, you know, being cruel, I suppose. You know, do things change for this year up to this point if San Jose wins that first game? Because I also was riffing on this about how if, and I know ifs and buts, et cetera, if they win game number one against Vegas, if they win game number two against Anaheim, the season right now has an entirely different complexion as opposed to here we go again.
Yep. That was exactly what I was going to say. It's contagious, right? And both positive and negative. When you see things go well, it's like, oh, we're on fire. Nothing's going to go wrong. And then when you see things go wrong, it's like, how the hell do we get out of this? You know? So, I also do want to highlight Mario because I don't know if you know, but Mario is actually my teammate for 1 year at UMass. So I got to know
you guys
Mario.
Did cross over. Okay.
Yeah, we played for a year together at UMass, and he's been one of my really good friends ever since. And I don't think his personality nearly gets the light it deserves. He is one of the greatest guys in the NHL, and he's super competitive. And he told me yesterday too, like specifically, man, like that those first two games, like if we find a way to just squeeze one win out, like we at least have three under our belt right now. You know, like I think that stuff spreads, especially with young guys too. Cause like when you're out there in the D zone and you're protecting a one goal lead, you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, get the puck out, get the puck out. Like you just don't want that to happen again. And you're playing almost, you're not playing to win, you're playing just not to lose. And I think that could be the mentality that the Sharks had after those first two games. But again, like those positive, upbeat personalities that they have, like even at morning skate, you can tell these guys are having a lot of fun and just, you know, so happy to be out there and so happy for another great opportunity. And that speaks for Ryan Warsawski as well. You know, I think that that Islander game, I thought the Sharks deserved a better outcome. I thought they were the much better team, and you know, Macklin had a couple of late game chances that, you know, I think one gets blocked and one, you know, Sorokin stops. But you can tell this team truly enjoys each other, and I think that's important too. And that was a big narrative last year, right? As bad as the Sharks were, it's like they were the good vibes team, right? Like I love seeing the I don't remember what it was called, but Randy and Mario and you know, the guys doing the Christmas song or whatever it
Oh yeah,
was.
the inflatable Christmas lights.
Inflatable, yeah, that was unbelievable. Like, you know, and seeing Macklin and Will doing that Judy Jupiter thing, you
Yes.
know, like they're a fun team to root for. And again, like with personalities like Ryan Reeves, you know, Ryan Reeves who tosses his helmet off the bench last night for Macklin's hat trick, like that's awesome. And again, like a guy like Mario who just is so competitive, but also so loose and so positive and so fun. It makes for a good environment, whether you're 0-4 and 2 or 4-2 and 0, you know? So, I think that's really important for these young kids, especially.
Did you cross over with the John Leonard as well?
I did. And John Leonard was one of the most skilled college
Dude.
players I've ever seen. I can't believe he didn't stick around in San Jose because I really thought he was going to be, you know, a star there. And granted, he's in Detroit now in their system, but yeah, he was, I think he had 30 goals before COVID hit, or 27 goals maybe was the total. But yeah, playing 3-on-3 with Mitchell Chafee, John Leonard, Cale Makar, Mario Ferraro, you know, that was the reason why I got scratched 20 games my sophomore year or whatever it was.
Yeah, I used to tell Mario before, I was like, did Cale teach you how to do that 270 degree spin off the wall, break a defender's ankles, and score a goal? He's like, nah, he hasn't given me those tips yet.
What people don't give Mario enough credit for, though, like his freshman year, he was probably the better offensive player on the blue line.
Really?
Like he scored one goal at Quinnipiac. He came down the left side wall, like from the point. I think it might have been like an interchange where the forward comes up the wall and, you know, crisscrosses with the D, and Mario got the puck and came down the wall and went like short side snipe, like similar to Marty Natchez's goal in Utah the other night. Like that's what Mario did against Quinnipiac. It was sick. Yeah, he was a hell of an offensive player. And I think, you know, with the Sharks, he's had to be a little bit more reliable defensively, obviously, because his D partners in the past were Brent Burns, who's, you know, definitely more of an offensive threat. But yeah, Mario, he had that chance last night too in the third where he came down the right side, cut into the middle, and just shot a little bit wide. But Max Miller, who does a good job covering the Sharks too, is laughing like, oh, I bet you wanted that one to go in last. And I was like, I've seen that one go in before. You know, so yeah, I could talk about Mario Ferraro all day long, man. Like he is just, I love that guy.
Quinnipiac is where Colin Graf came from, and he's a dude who he was just small his draft year. He was like half a foot shorter and much, I think he's even bigger now than he was last year, and he's come on strong. Like he's a guy who I think has some of the best instincts that I watch consistently of a young player, strong along the boards, can win those 50-50 pucks. As his game evolves, I think he's going to be a real problem and teams are going to hate him, whether he's on the second or third line out there on the PK. Like I just look at him and think that guy's going to be a problem.
Yeah, he could shoot the puck too, huh? When he gets his open looks, he can really rip one. There's a lot of, I mean, this team is loaded with college talent. Like, Gaudette won the Hobey Baker my freshman year. You know, got to see him up close a bunch. We played Northeastern a couple of times. He, speaking of shooting the puck, Gaudette, when that guy is open, oh man, he's dangerous. But yeah, Graf, like Gaudette, those are two guys that are on your third line that are, you know, playing pretty well. Like last night, they had a pretty strong game too. You know, I don't know what their stats ended up being. Obviously, those two clicked for the first goal. But the Sharks have, like, you know, I don't want to say like the strongest depth, but it's not like a weakness by any means.
We'll have more of that conversation with Johnny Lazarus coming up later on the Sharks Audio Network, but we are out of time as we've got to get ready for game day. It's coming fast. Pre-game 3:30, go time 4 o'clock. I'll actually be on NBC pre today if you want to check that out as well. Dan Rusinowski, Alex Stalock on the call, 4 o'clock right here on the Sharks Audio Network. San Jose takes on the Devils. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.
Off the back of the net, and there's Michael Mesa digging it free. The Gaudette centering feed, and score! Adam Gaudette gets his 100th National Hockey League point on a tremendous forecheck by San Jose, and Michael Mesa in the midst of it all in his first game at the Garden is going to get another assist at 1:58 of the first period. Sharks 1, Rangers nothing.